This is a Crowd podcast.
This is Influenced, the podcast that will get inside your mind, or at least make you think that it has. We've got guests, but a lot of podcasts have guests. My guests think they're here to plug something, but little do they know, from the moment they walk in, I'm playing games with their minds.
How did you do that?
I'm in control.
How?
What?
Get out of my head!
See, I love mind games. I'm a mentalist, and what my guests don't know is that they're being influenced the entire time. I mean, even if it is in the podcast title.
Are you ready?
Oh my God.
Watch. I'm just messing with you.
Oh
no,
my God.
I can't. Can you imagine?
Are you going to explain or?
Oh my God. How?
Feel weirded out?
Very.
We're just getting started, trust me.
You're literally a wizard. This is great. I feel like I'm chatting to Dumbledore.
Because you don't really know what's about to happen.
I have no idea.
How? How?
Is that his name?
Yeah.
What?
Wow.
I'm Joel M, and on this week's episode, I'm joined by Olympic gold medalist Tom Daly. Tom is a diver, and I've thought about nothing all week than one particular dive. That dive being the Gainer 3.5 Tuck, a dive that Tom has done multiple times across his career. I've been watching Tom over the last couple of weeks to get to know him a little bit, and this is the one I want him to think of. So I'm going to try and influence him to tell me about this particular dive at the end of the podcast. Let's see if I can pull it off. For now, guard your minds and welcome to Influenced. Tom Daly.
Hello.
Welcome. Well, hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, I'm caffeinated and I'm ready to roll.
I'm not yet fully caffeinated, but just give me 10 minutes.
Exactly. It needs to kick in.
Yeah, it does. Thank you for coming on the show.
No, thanks for having me.
Well, listen, it's a pleasure. And, you know, I want to get to know you a little bit better right off the bat. So we're going to jump right in with some fun.
Okay, I'm ready for
with
fun.
With a game, Tom.
Yes, I love a game.
Can
I win this game?
there is a prize if you win the game.
Okay.
There isn't actually a prize. Someone did win once and we didn't have anything for them. It was sad.
I guess the prize is just knowing that you won.
If I win, I'm keeping the book. That's my prize.
Fine.
And if you win, you can keep your book.
Fine.
That's a good
great
prize.
Okay.
It's the best prize you could possibly
get.
Yeah,
it is the best prize.
The game is two truths and a lie.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you to tell me three bits of biz about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them I want to be true, one of them to be a lie. Mm-hmm. My job is to tell you which is which.
Okay.
And no guarantees, but I will try my best to read your body language, your face, and tell you what it is. I should say, before we start, I always like to give people some heads up. Your personality type, you'll probably tell me the lie first. So just to give you an idea of that, just to get it out of the way and get rid of the nervous jitters, especially after some
So then now you're going to be like, oh, if I say the lie first, then you'll be like, oh, wait, am I going to double bluff? But then it's like...
Quite so. This is just manipulation, really, at this point.
Okay.
And do it in your own time. I will say, don't tell me which one you're doing first, because that takes the challenge.
Well, yes, okay.
Bit, yeah.
So... When I was 9 years old, I was the under 27 kilo third placing judo winner.
Wow.
Yeah.
When you were 9 years old.
When I was 9 years old.
All right. Okay. I'll let you tell me all of them, then I'll ask you the questions.
Okay.
How's that sound?
Great.
Okay.
When I was 10 years old, I was senior national diving champion.
Okay. Sounds believable. And the last one.
When I was 16, I did a photo shoot for Italian Vogue and shot Kate Moss for my GCSE photography.
Okay, that one's definitely true. I think you put that one in thinking I'm going to think that one's the lie. The reason I think that is true is because you were smiling the whole way as if you've just got away with telling me the lie beforehand. So I think that probably is true. Can you just say it to me one more time, the third one?
The third one?
Yeah, just to be sure.
That I did a photo shoot for Italian Vogue and I shot Kate Moss for my GCSE photography.
No, I totally believe that. I don't know how that would have come around, but I totally believe that. Is that true?
It is.
It is true.
It's true.
That's a great little truth. How'd that come around?
I was in a photo shoot for Italian Vogue with Kate Moss in a swimming pool being shot by Bruce Weber, and it was like a really weird, like it was like a real like surreal situation to be in. And then afterwards I just said to Kate Moss, I was like, do you mind if I take some photos of you for my GCSE photography?
Done.
And she was like, yeah, great, let's do it.
And it just, it all unfolded?
Yeah.
Well, that's a beautiful truth, isn't it? That's a good one.
Yeah, it is good.
That would be the one I think most people would have thought was the fib.
Yeah, exactly. I know. So. It's like, sounds like so untrue that like, how could it possibly be?
Good strategy there, Tom Daly, good strategy. Okay, so it's one of the first ones that are a lie. Could I hear them again? In
so,
any order you like.
When I was 9 years old, I was under 27 kilo, third placing in Devon for judo.
Okay, and the second?
I was 10 years old when I won my first senior national title.
Right, here's what I think. I think that, don't answer just yet, I think that's the lie. I don't.
Which one?
The second one. And I think it's because it sounds the most believable and you've picked something that I would think, well, yeah, that makes sense because the diving thing. So I think the first one's true, which is, it also seems just about plausible.
Just about plausible.
No, I'm kidding. That sounds believable. Okay. And I think number two was the lie. And I'm actually, for the first time really ever, I'm not going off body language or facial expressions. I'm just using a bit of logic here. I think it's probably the second
one. I'm trying to stay as still as possible.
You really are.
I'm trying not to give anything away.
You're doing very, very well. It worries me for the rest of the show, actually. Okay. It makes me think you're going to be harder to crack.
So well, what's your final answer?
I'm going to say number two is the lie. And I think number one is true.
You're right.
Yes.
You're right.
Come on. I'm just taking your book.
I know. I was like trying to be close to the truth, but not quite, because I'd only won under 18 title. I was being a bit tricky.
So that's what people often do, is they'll make their lie just
very close.
Yeah. To the point people have almost cheated in the past where they've changed like the tiniest thing, and that makes it really, really difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
But actually sometimes because they're trying to be so sneaky, they come across as being sneaky and then it makes it easier. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to take that and it sets us off to a good start. But you really were under nines.
Yeah, so it was
champion.
So third place. So I basically went under 27 kilos and 27 kilos is like really little.
Yeah.
And I used to go to judo every Friday evening after school. I'd go and do a judo class. And I got to a point where I injured myself and I was doing judo and nearly broke my arm. My diving coach said to me, you have to choose between judo or diving.
Oh, Lord.
And I chose diving. So,
did you always like diving more, or was it a hard choice at the time?
It was a hard choice at the time because I really enjoyed judo. I found it really fun. But with diving, I was already way further advanced than I was in judo. So,
well, can you imagine how your life would have
looked
differently?
Like, would I have gotten to the Olympics of judo? I don't know.
Maybe. Let's say you would have.
Yeah, let's say I did.
Maybe you would have done even better in judo.
Who knows? Let's rewind. Like, okay, if you've got a time machine, I'll hop back.
Let's try it. Yeah. That is one of my tricks I can do.
Oh, great.
The whole time travel thing.
Can't wait.
It's how I do all my stuff.
So you go to the future and then you come back and correct your answers.
But don't tell anyone because it makes the tricks less impressive.
Fine, I won't.
Okay, so this one was pretty easy, guys. Firstly, Tom is a very competitive person, and I could tell he was trying hard to make me get this wrong. So he tried to bluff me by picking something that I would think is true, the diving. This was an obvious move for me, and I picked it up pretty quickly. I'm sure you did too. So, two truths and a lie down. Let's see how we do on the rest of the episode. Well, listen, you have had an amazing career. And I think most people expect us to jump straight in and talk about diving. But actually, your book's in front of me here, Tom Daly, Made with Love, and knitting.
Yes.
Knitting. So I have loads of questions about that. But how did you find out that you enjoyed knitting?
Yeah, for me, knitting was... essentially, my coach said, you never sit still, you never rest, you never recover, you never do anything other than, like, if there's a cupboard that needs to be sorted out, I'm running over there trying to, like, sort it out. I just can't sit still and just... rest. Mm. So my coach was like, you need to find something to do where you're resting and not doing very much. So then my husband said to me, you need to try knitting or something like that. Because people on film sets, he's a filmmaker, and some actors on film sets while they're waiting around knit squares or whatever it may be. So I was like, I'll give that a go. So then I downloaded a YouTube video to take on a plane to learn. And when I got there, I didn't really know what I was doing. But then there were some other divers and coaches that knew how to knit and saw me struggling and came and gave me some helping hand. And then each project I did, I learned a new skill to the point that I learned how to crochet. And then I learned to design and create my own things. And I started Made with Love because I didn't want to like clog up my main feed with knitting because I thought, who the hell is going to care about knitting?
It's not what they expect.
I know.
No.
So then I was like, okay, I'm going to do a Made with Love by Tom Daly Instagram. Mm. And then people saw me knitting at the Olympics. But honestly, it was what, and then yes. I wanted to like pass that on, like my passion for it on to other people. Mm. But it was, it's been it's my mindfulness, my meditation, my way of switching off and just being really present. So
that's got to be really, really important, especially, well, I mean, you say that you actually can't switch off. How long were you training, like in your peak a day?
It's about 5 to 6 hours a day, 6 days a week.
So, yeah, you would think it'd be easy to switch off after that amount of training. Yeah. You just want to stop, but you couldn't.
Well, the thing is, as a sports person, your whole life is your job because you can't just, it's not a job where you can just like leave it at the pool and come home and just like do whatever you want. You have to make sure you're eating well. You have to make sure you're sleeping well. You have to make sure that you are doing all of the recovery protocols with your supplements and making sure that you're stretching. Like there's so much that goes into it that can affect your training the next day. So it was hard to switch off. And when I became a parent and now like Robbie's 4 years old, he like having that to go home to and like having Robbie at home, that really definitely was able to like take me out of the diving space as well.
Yes. I do have one question for you. Yes. I asked, I told a couple of my friends that we were having you on the show, and one of my friends had a very interesting question. He said, can you ask Tom if he's a good swimmer or can he swim?
I wasn't a very good swimmer for sure. And it was the only, I actually really had to learn how to swim properly because I did the Comic Relief like Ultra Endurance Challenge at the beginning of this year. And it's funny because forever I get in the street, it's like, oh, you're the swimmer. And I was like, well, actually, no, I do not swim. I swim very much under the water. Once I hit the water, I swim underwater to the side and get out.
Yeah.
Or doggy paddle, like to get to the edge. So learning to swim properly was something that I had to do like a lot later in life. Of course I can swim, but I would, in terms of being like competitive swimming, like never.
So you're not like a good swimmer?
No.
Like, are you beating a duck in a race?
No.
You're not
absolutely
not.
A duck's going fast. I guess if it's flying, but if it's
above the water.
Okay, so yeah, I think I should definitely beat a duck above the water.
Are you beating like an otter?
No, otters are fast underwater, aren't they?
I think they are.
Yeah, they're like darts in the water, I reckon.
They're pretty quick.
Yeah.
Well, you heard it here first. Tom Daly wouldn't beat an otter in a race.
No.
But you dive better than an otter, and that's all right.
Yeah, I think I dive better than an otter.
You dive better than an otter.
Maybe not quite as good as a dolphin, but...
Oh, you think a dolphin would beat you in a, I don't know how you get the dolphin up on the board, but...
Yeah, they don't need a board. They just flip out of the water, don't they? They just like come out and just do it.
I'm so bad at diving. Whenever I was on holidays as a kid, I was made fun of by the rest of the family for being, you know, notoriously terrible at it. Just, I think I was just frightened of hitting my face. That was always my thing. I just didn't like it.
Well, there was lots of, I mean, I've hit my head on the diving board twice, but and also when people dive in the water, they often dive in like swimmers do, where your hands are on top of each other like this. Mm. And that is like the first way that you're going to smack your head.
So that's
head
wrong.
That's wrong.
You don't put your hands on top of each other.
No, so you put your hands on top of each other like that.
It's got to be really difficult and exhausting to practice. Like, because every single time you get one shot and then you got to go and you gotta get up again.
Lots of stairs.
So let's say when you were training at your peak, how many times up and down are you doing in a day?
Probably, it depends on what the session is and how many dives I'm doing. Because on 10 meter, you can't really do more than 18 to 20 dives per day or else your body starts to deteriorate because you hit the water at 35 miles an hour. So it's quite like... intense, but if you're doing like things off the 1 meter or the 3 meter, you can do a lot more. So at the higher end, you're doing maybe like 70 dives in a session, and so like on the lower end, you're doing 30 to 40. But
did you ever get sick or bored of it during trainings? And there were times you just did not want to do it, even if you had this drive and you wanted to be an Olympian. There's got to be days where you just thought, oh no,
absolutely.
But like, there's the days you just do it anyway.
Yeah, it's like on those days you just show up. And you just try and do what you can. And it was only later in my diving career that I started to learn to be kind to myself. And if I found myself in a position where I was feeling like I wasn't able to get the most out of that day, or if my body wasn't quite feeling right, to actually listen to that and adjust training accordingly. And, you know, as I've gotten older, like I'm like the granddad of diving now. So it's very much like I need to train smart so that my body can last, because else if my body breaks down, I can't dive.
Can't do anything.
It's about, training smarter, not harder in that way.
Well, you've also got the other side of it now. Like, you're a celebrity now as well. You've got to kind of That comes with its own things as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's weird because I never think of it like that. Like, because I always know that like diving is kind of where my like passion lies. And I feel really, really fortunate to have found another passion later in life in the knitting and crochet stuff. But it, so for me, that's, yeah, it is very weird that now, like even when I was, it's funny though, in the UK, it's like very much like, oh, you're the diver. If I go anywhere else in the world, I'm the knitter.
So, interesting.
Yeah. So it's really, really odd. Like I spent a bit of time in Canada and America over the last year and it's like, oh, you're the knitter. And I'm like, well, actually, well, yes, I do knit.
There's this other
There's
thing.
There's a bit more than that, but yeah.
You just shouldn't tell them.
I know.
That would be brilliant to bring up like ages down the line.
Yeah.
Same. You're the knitter. And then, oh yeah, also. It'd be also good for Two Truths and a Lie. They didn't know.
Yes.
I'm actually, you know, an Olympian.
I actually
I'll
do
say,
a
well,
bit.
That's the lie.
Yeah, I do a bit of fancy falling in my time too.
Not in again. You probably, your brain would work very differently than an average person to be an Olympic athlete. I don't think you have to be wired a bit differently, or maybe you just want it more than someone else. I don't think it's as simple as that though.
It comes back to this age old question, isn't it? Like nature versus nurture and like what comes first and what's the most important. And because you see often some of the most talented people, like in sport in particular, some extremely talented people that just never make it. So, and I think there's something about work ethic that supersedes any kind of natural talent that somebody has. Because, you know, talent can only get you so far. You have to then be able to push and be willing to put the work in.
Do you feel like you are a lot more talented? Obviously more than the average person who does time. Of course, like talent's a thing, but were there people that were as talented as you that you just outworked?
There were lots of people that were on paper way more talented than me in like growing up in the diving world. I would fail every single test. I would fail the flexibility test. I would fail the strength test. But then when it came to the diving, I would pass the tests. It was all like the tests that were like in terms of the height, your weight, your strength and flexibility. And there were loads of times where I was told that I was never going to make it because I couldn't do a certain exercise. There was like these leg lifts, hanging leg lifts on a bar where you have to like touch your toes on the bar. And we had to be able to do 10 in under 15 seconds. And I would maybe get to like 4 or 5 and my legs would be bent and I would really struggle. They were like, oh, you're never going to be a diver if you can't do that. And then I couldn't do the splits.
Obviously a bad
like,
test, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was like, they were like, you can't do the splits. And that's the splits is just something that you just never use in diving. Mm. And it actually turned out that I have like my hip sockets are fused in a weird way where I don't actually have 180 degree motion because my bones are in the way. And I kept trying to do it to the point where my like hips were tearing. So it's, yeah, I've had all kinds of issues.
So you like totally disproved the system basically?
It's funny because the other person that was in the same position as me as being told that they couldn't do it was Jack Law. And he went on to become Olympic champion in diving as well. So it's like, it's just sometimes when you see things on paper of what somebody thinks is going to make the best diver or the best athlete or whatever it may be, isn't always actually the case.
No, of course it's not. There's how would you measure that?
Exactly.
There's always going to be an outlier. That's got to feel good though to know that,
yes,
you were told I couldn't do it and then,
Yeah, I guess the moral of the story is if somebody tells you that you can't do something, you just, if you enjoy it and you're passionate about it, just keep going.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's like if you, and also sometimes, I know they always say like, if somebody tells you that you can't do something, you want to prove them wrong. Mm. So I think there's an element of that as well.
Oh, I think that's definitely true. Mm. Depending what type of person you are, if you're competitive, like you clearly are, if you were visualizing winning, you know, gold medals and stuff, I think that can really, really spur you on actually.
Yeah, there's been Monopoly boards flipped in our house.
Me too.
Yeah.
It's Monopoly brings out a different
the
side
worst
of people,
people,
doesn't it?
Oh my gosh.
Christmas every year, myself and my cousin Sarah, we sit and we will not move until one of us has destroyed the other person.
And literally,
it can
normally
be worse.
I remember my brother William used to, like, every year would get so frustrated. Just knock everything over and be like, I'm going to bed. And I'm like, okay.
Sore loser.
Yeah, exactly. I said, my family is so competitive. Well, between my brothers anyway.
Do you think growing up in a competitive household possibly led to you wanting to do something like athletic and highly competitive, I suppose?
Yeah, I guess so. But it's funny because I was so competitive outside of diving in terms of being able to do the best thing. But when I was actually in diving, I was almost like the opposite of it. I was very like calm with how I would compete and I wouldn't be thinking, I need to win. It was like trying to really stay focused on the process and just like being in the moment, which was something that is funny. Like it was almost like, in sport, you know how you should behave in terms of like when it's actually being measured. And then when you're with your family, you just are like, you show the real competitive like angle you want.
I want to jump back on that in just a minute. But before we do, we'll take a little ad break.
Lovely.
When we get back, I would love to play another game with you.
I'm down for that.
A game of 20 questions.
Ooh.
So to tell you how the game works, for the listeners who hear it the first time, I am going to ask you to think of something, and within 20 questions, I'm going to tell you what it is that you're thinking of.
Okay.
Catch being, when you answer my questions, you don't have to tell the truth. You can lie if you like.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we're going to let you decide what it is that you want to think of. We sometimes have people think of bank PIN numbers, names of first kiss, name of their first pet, biggest fear. You can think of last person you texted. Lots of options.
Okay.
Which one are we settling on today?
I'll say first pet's name.
You're going to go for your first pet's name, not the type of animal, the name of the animal is what we're saying.
Yeah, I'll be impressed if you get both.
Be impressed if I get both. Okay, well, I will try my very best. I might need 60 questions,
yeah,
but
exactly.
We'll come back. Tom, thank you. We will see you all in a second.
Hi guys, it's me, Sam.
And me, Billy. And we have a podcast called The Sam and Billy Show. Mum, what would you describe it as?
Good question.
Me to prank you
now.
Go for it. What are you gonna say?
Next minute, me and her are in the meat wagon.
Shut
getting dropped off outside.
You've got racks. Not mice, racks. He's got racks.
Mum's in there with me. I've got a Coke in my hand. I'm like just giving birth. And I was like, oof.
And that is gonna be the most irritating thing. Edward's gonna be bugged out with you.
It's so annoying.
We'll be playing three blind mice and the recorder in the house. Seriously.
Oh, it would like.
And then we would just scream, didn't we?
Have you never tried your breast milk?
No.
I think it's best to just give us a listen.
Listen to The Sam and Billy Show now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Listening to our everyday kind of just gibberish, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Tom Daly, it is time for 20 questions. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Felt like a WWE presenter there.
I know. I'm also like trying to not give away anything in my body language. I'm like holding onto my chair like I'm...
Do you know, I'll give you some advice. So I was telling people about this in one of the other episodes we've done where actually when you tense up more and try and hide it, you'll just push that energy out somewhere else because it has to go somewhere. You can't just keep the energy inside your body.
Okay.
So, or maybe I'm lying to make you relax. I don't know. We'll see. Okay. So I have 20 questions. You are thinking of the name of your first pet.
Indeed.
I will try and tell you what that is. And you want me to guess the animal as well?
Sure, as a bonus, if you get it.
As a bonus point.
Yeah.
All right, that works for me. Okay, first question, remembering you don't have to tell the truth. You can lie if you
okay.
like. Was this a dog?
No.
Are you sure?
I'm like, oh no.
Okay, is this a rabbit?
No.
Is this a cat?
No.
You do the same thing each time. That's good. Up to the right and back down again. And you breathe in and back down again. Is this an elephant?
Yes.
Just trying to get a silly response from you because what you'll probably do when you lie now is do something similar. Okay. Is this a giraffe?
No.
Just, I could be wrong. Was this a cat, to be honest?
No.
It wasn't a cat?
No.
Okay, you're slightly tougher to read.
I love that.
Think of the first letter of the name, not of the animal of the
name. First letter of the name. Okay.
Yes. Okay, relax. Try not to give this away. I'm going to go slowly to try and put you off, and I'm going to get a little bit closer just to...
I'm just going to close my eyes.
Makes it slightly trickier, yeah. Well, why not? Yeah, close your eyes.
Oh, gosh.
Close your eyes.
I'm laughing already.
No, listen, I'm going to tell you what I see as we do this. You already think the first letter? A, B, C, D, E, F. Yep, okay, so it's already gone. A, B, C, A, B, B, B. There, I know I can make you crack eventually. Open your eyes. Begin with the letter B.
Yes.
Yes, okay. So it'll only be a pet names. It can only be one of so many, unless you're one of these strange families that give them like human names for pet names, which is always fun, but it could be. Okay.
Who knows?
I'll ask a couple more questions. I think I'll be able to crack it. I think weirdly enough with you, I'll be able to get the name, but I might struggle with what the animal is, unless it was a rabbit. Was it?
It was a rabbit.
It was a rabbit, yeah. I knew it was a cat or a rabbit, wasn't sure. Think of the name. Now we know it's a rabbit. Oh, I think I actually know what it is. This, I am sort of guessing here a bit, but just because I know it's a rabbit and it begins with B, I'll make a guess.
Oh gosh, I'm like...
It's okay. My final answer.
Your final answer?
Yeah.
Go on.
Would you have called the rabbit Belle or Bella?
Which one do you want to choose?
Oh gosh!
Which one are you saying?
I'm going to say Belle.
You're right.
Yes!
That's... Yeah, you're right.
It was Belle. Impressive. It was impressive.
Yeah, a Belle, like a rabbit named Belle. What colour was it?
White.
Yeah.
Come on. I'm a genius. See how I knew that? Because lots of people have rabbits that aren't white. That's true. It's at least 50-50 there.
Oh, really?
That's more impressive than the rest of the trick. Thank you. What age were you when you had Belle?
Young. I think I was like six, seven.
Little tote. No. Belle's not obviously around anymore.
No.
Oh, sorry. Sorry for him to bring
Belle,
that up.
Belle went to the woods one day, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Belle.
Yeah, Belle went to the woods and didn't come back.
Oh, poor little Belle. I actually stole Belle from my magic act to bring Belle out of a hat.
Oh, okay.
And I have Belle here. No.
And here she is. Yeah.
She would be like 25.
Imagine. No.
Yeah, I always wanted a rabbit to be able to do the rabbit out of a hat trick.
Yes.
Never thought it was worth the effort of actually keeping the animal.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Quite cruel.
And I also didn't know, like, I also, when with that, like, I don't know how magicians even, like, I mean, I guess that's part of the magic, to pull things out of your hat, but...
So we'll let you into a little secret, right? The way we used to do it, I wasn't alive, but from my research,
okay,
is magicians would wear really baggy suits, because that was sort of the style back then, and you could slip a rabbit up the sleeve, and as you reached into the hat, rabbit goes down the sleeve into the hat, pull the rabbit out of the hat.
Wow.
The problem is, these days, you can't do that because the jackets just look so silly, and unless I like gain her 50 pounds and have a massive big jacket on, it doesn't really work.
Is that where like the sayings like I've got something up my sleeve?
Yes. So I actually have a tattoo that says nothing with an arrow, so when people ask is there something up your sleeve, I say no, there's nothing up my sleeve.
Wow, that's a good one.
I was 18.
And that's why there's the wizard sleeve.
The wizard sleeve?
Yeah, you know, like the wizard, you know what a wizard sleeve is, right?
Oh, yeah, the big dangly long wizard sleeves. Yeah,
so like that's one, maybe because like the magician things, they have like, you know, baggy wizard sleeves.
That is why we have the baggy wizard sleeves, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I should just start wearing full wizard outfit. No one's doing that anymore.
Yeah. Or you could just get like, yeah, just go around, get a full wizard outfit and just put rabbits up your wizard sleeve. it'll be like a magician paradise.
You could probably fit like 10 up those big sleeves as well.
Yeah.
So stupid. Oh, would you have
much,
any pets now?
I have some pets.
You have some pets. You want to keep them secret?
I feel like I should just tell you. I've got two aquatic...
You're like, guess.
Yeah, I'm like, guess. Just guess. I've got two aquatic frogs.
Wow.
And one suckerfish. And then I also have two cats that live in Plymouth with my mum now.
Fab.
They're like Bengal cats, like leopardy looking ones.
Gorgeous. Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah.
I want to get pets, but I can't commit to it. Yeah, I travel too much.
So, yeah, exactly. That's why my mum has my cats, because I was traveling for diving so much. Mm-hmm. And when I moved to London, there was nobody to look after the cats.
Me again. Very happy with how this went. I think it was slightly easy again. Once I knew it was a rabbit and began with the letter B, which he completely gave away in his face. You should have seen him. I knew it could only be a number of things. Belle, pretty common name for a rabbit. And I'm taking the win on this one. Are you close with your mum?
I am, yes. My mum's actually up at the moment.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, she's staying with me for a little bit.
Oh, lovely.
Nice. Yeah.
Was it in the early days? Because it's probably quite a sacrifice, you know, having your kid get into training every morning early and stuff. Does she have to do all that, all the runs and stuff?
Yeah, no. So actually, my husband stayed at home with Robbie, like, for the first year. And I would go to training and then come back. And, like, he would, because my husband writes, so would write at the laptop or at the desk or whatever while Robbie was sleeping. And then when he started nursery, I would just take him to nursery in the morning, go and do my training and then pick him up on the way home. And, you know, we just figure it out, basically.
It's a whole lot of time, isn't it? What time are you getting up at? Like 3:30?
Yeah. Well, I would normally, my day was like, I would wake up at 6 to get up, have my coffee, have breakfast, watch the news, do some knitting and have some time to myself. My son would normally wake up around 7-ish. We'd get like him sorted for breakfast. I'd have had my breakfast by then. And then at 7:30, exactly, 7:30, 7:45, I'd leave the house to take Robbie to nursery on the way to training. Then I would train for 2.5 hours, have lunch, and then go back and train for another 2.5 hours. Then I would go home via the nursery, pick Robbie up, and make dinner, go to bed.
So what can you gain through diet? Like, how much are you eating? Did you hear that? There's going to be a lot of references over the next 10 minutes to gains, tuck 3.5. Keep your ears open.
It depends on what space of my training I'm in, but often divers don't eat as much as swimmers, for example, because we're not like an endurance sport, we're explosive power. So we end up being quite high protein and like small and often, and making sure that we eat. Like one of our rules was like 20-20-20, which was 20 grams of protein within 20 minutes of finishing your training.
Oh,
what was the extra 20?
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the third 20?
20 grams of carbs.
20-20-20.
Yeah.
It's going to be my new regime.
Because you need to have the carbs to be able to have the absorption value for the protein. And if it's out longer than 20 minutes, it doesn't, it, you know, obviously you can have up to 45 minutes, but it's best to do it in the short window as possible.
God, there's so much more even outside of being at the dining board. Like so much more. It's your whole life, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
You have to really care, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you really do. It's like, you have to make sure you're eating the right things in the evening, making sure you go into bed at a right time and getting enough sleep. And it's a full-time thing.
So like what time are you tucking yourself in at?
I'm an early to bed person. Like, unless I have something that I'm doing with friends or going to somewhere, I am normally in bed by 9 or asleep by 9.
Oh, that's bliss.
Yeah. Because I know I'm going to be up like at 6:30, 7, so.
You're not getting away with 3.5 hours sleep.
I just like sleep.
Well, I guess it must have been at a point in your life, maybe even still, where it became antisocial at some point.
Oh, yeah.
You had to say no to loads, I'm guessing.
Being an athlete is incredibly antisocial. But my friends have been amazing about that. And what I would often do is do like a dinner club every Monday where I would just invite my friends over and I would cook and like different people each time so that I could have like one social evening and it would be a Monday so people wouldn't want to be out late and it was just my way of seeing everyone so then the rest of the week I could like chill.
That's like, you invite them around, you're making sure you get your 20 grams of protein for the meal and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a whole lot of dedication. That is nice though that you actually prioritized seeing friends.
Yeah, like, you know, so it's important to like have the balance. Like for the longest of time, like I didn't have that balance. And then finding the balance really kind of gives you the perspective to also enjoy the process a bit more.
A lot of high performer stuff is about marginal gains. Like what sort of stuff were you missing out on? What were you cutting out?
No, like I sacrificed for a long time, especially going into like 2016. I like cut out lots of things. Like I was cutting out, making sure I was in bed by 9 o'clock. I wouldn't go and do anything on the weekend. I didn't drink for 2 years. I made sure that I never ate anything that was like fast food. Like there were so many things that I was doing and it got to a point where I thought I was in the best shape of my life and it didn't work out in 2016 to the way that I wanted it to. So then after that, I started to find a little bit more of a balance. And then once I found that balance was when I started to get the success. So
yes.
Like you say, there's probably like some benefits to having those periods of time where you do focus to give you the lessons that you need.
But, well, maybe in the beginning, like you said, it's all you thought about and all you did.
Yeah.
For the longest time, you got to go through that phase.
Exactly.
That weird, obsessive nonsense phase. Yeah,
it is. It's like you get, like, I was such a student of sport as well and such a student of diving that I would just study videos and videos and videos. And like in my spare time when I was a kid, I would just watch YouTube videos after YouTube videos of people diving just to study what everyone was doing.
It's really impressive to me in that when I wanted to practice what I was doing, I could just sit like with the TV on and practice sleight of hand moves over and over. I didn't have to, you know, go drive to the pool, get ready, eat right, everything. There's so much that goes into being an athlete, which is far and beyond anything I could imagine. I find it really, really impressive.
And I probably started getting serious from when I was about 10 years old as well. So like, but it's also something that I've never known any different.
Yeah, it's just that was just your life. That was normal.
Which is why, like, in this last year, since having a break from diving, I've been able to have, like, going out during the week to, like, an event or going to the theatre during the week. Like, just was something that I couldn't just go to the theatre on a weekday because they wouldn't meet, it doesn't kick out until, like, 10:15 and then I don't get home until 10:45 and I'm like, to go to bed at 11 o'clock during the week, like, that would have sent me over the edge.
Worth it.
It would have.
Did you ever overtrain and realize that you needed to rest more?
Yeah. Like that was, that's often how athletes that find their downfall is they overtrain, they get tired, their nervous systems go to like crap and then you're tired and you aren't able to function and then you injure yourself and then once you're injured, it's hard to come back from it. So yeah.
It's really scary how fast like one little mistake could just mess you up.
Yeah. I mean, the Olympics itself, like they happen once every 4 years. And especially in the synchro event, you get six dives. You get one shot at each of them. Yeah. And each dive is only like 1.5, 1.6 seconds. Yeah. So you think about it, after six dives, it adds up to like just the same amount of time as a 100 meter final. So it's all over very good. Like a lot of training for those, like just at like around 10 seconds.
Tom, you could be spinning through the air like three times, like somersaulting, backflipping. You got like half spins in there. Is that not absolutely terrifying?
Every time I stand on that diving board, it is terrifying. It's not natural for a human being to stand up on the top of a 10-meter platform and look down and be like, oh, I'm going to throw myself off of this and do some spins as I go down.
It's totally different to any other sort of sport or performer in general, because it's not like there's a crowd looking down or up at a theatre. You're on a board.
Platform, yeah. There's not many people that can say they wear more clothes to bed than they do to work as well. So,
yeah.
But then there's me.
Yeah. But you stand out. It's good.
It's like, it is a very weird thing that, like, you know, but then the more you wear in diving, the harder it is. You got to keep everything compact.
Do haircuts make a difference?
You know, funnily enough, they don't necessarily make a difference, but there's one Australian diver at the moment that has quite long hair, and a guy, and he just lets it be down and doesn't tie it back up. And so actually a couple of the judges came up to him and said, like, would you be able to tie your hair up because it's distracting?
Distracting.
Yeah, so like when they're trying to judge the dive, when they see hair flying everywhere, it automatically looks like not as precise and neat.
Yeah.
So oftentimes he was getting like almost like marked down because it looks a bit like, what's going on?
That's mental, isn't it?
Yeah.
Little small things like that make a big difference. Mm. Should have thought about that.
I know.
Was your hair not like just dry all the time with the chlorine?
Yeah. I used to like have all these like hair masks and like things, and I was like constantly putting in. But it's, you kind of just have to, like, that's one of the worst thing for me about diving was getting wet.
What do you mean?
Like,
you didn't like it?
Every day that I would stand about to do my first dive, and I'm like, I'm getting wet again.
Oh, for God's sake.
It's going to get wet.
That is annoying, isn't it?
It's like being cold and wet is like the worst anyway.
Oh, the pool be cold
as well? Sometimes the pool would be cold. And like if we dive outdoors ever, like sometimes like it'd be freezing outside.
Why would you choose to do it outdoors if indoors was a choice?
Well, because lots of times the competitions were just in outdoor pools.
Oh, the actual competitions,
yeah,
Like
Rio was outdoors for the Olympics. There's Rome, Barcelona, Shanghai. Like they all have outdoor pools. So,
training indoors.
I train indoors because in the UK, like, I mean, there's no outdoor diving pools.
No, so, you'd be crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think the coldest I dived in was in LA over Christmas one year, and it was 5 degrees outside, and it was absolutely freezing.
Torture.
My feet and my hands were just, when you're wet, like in 5 degrees weather, it's like just not, it's not it.
It's not worth it. Pick a different career.
Exactly.
Has it been worth it? Like the amount to sacrifice everything for you?
Yeah. To have a career where I was able to become Olympic champion. Yeah. Mm. It was like everything was worth it.
Yeah.
It kind of like, it's funny though, because you do it and you're like, oh, I did it. Like, okay, cool. Like, what's next? And I think that's the athlete thing as well. It's like you do something, you achieve it, and you're like, okay, so what now? Like, where am I going next?
Yeah. Do you ever get that like post competition blues?
Yeah. And like in 2012, I had it massively because, like, from drawing that picture when I was 9 to getting to the Beijing Olympics and London Olympics, winning a medal in front of a home crowd. And then I was like, what's my purpose now? Mm. Like, I was 18 and I had to go back and finish my A levels, and like life just went on, and I was just like, it just was like, oh, like, how can I, like, what's my purpose now?
Yeah, getting the motivation to do your A-levels must have been hard. Like, do you not just sit there and think, what is the point of this?
The funny thing is, all of the A-levels that I've done have come in handy.
Okay, so what did you study?
So I did Spanish, and I use that all the time when I'm traveling.
Fair.
Photography, which came in handy when I was doing like YouTube stuff and all of that. And maths, which then came in handy to become a knitwear designer, because knitwear design, you don't need to be good at maths to learn how to knit, but we're not, like, to create a jumper, for example, and being able to write a pattern, it all bases off like a 10 by 10 centimeter square, how many stitches by how many rows.
Yes.
And then that's how you can work out how many stitches you cast on based on that 10 set. So then you, like, basically are doing the maths to make the right size thing.
So it all came full circle.
You
have to give this knitting a go, because
you're
gonna have to. My friends are constantly on to me, like, Joel, will you sit still? Like, stop moving around, especially if I've had coffee. Yeah. I'm just frantic. So yeah. I have to try this.
Give it a go.
Well, this is the book to go to, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Dilly, Made with Love. Just briefly, how long have you been working on this for?
So I've been like doing so many designs around this book. I'm designing stuff all the time, but this book's been in the works since January, which is a really fast turnaround.
Mm.
And it's kind of, the nice thing I like about the book is the fact that these knitting things aren't just things that you could just buy in a shop. These are things that are handmade. They are slow fashion. It's all things. And there's lots of things in there as well about upcycling clothes, recycling t-shirts and cutting them out in order to create yarn to then make things from it. And there's like the stuff for your pets.
I've just found a dog hat, everybody.
There is a dog hat with pom-poms.
It's adorable.
There's just loads of different things in there. Like there's also cushions and blankets and jumpers, vests, hats, like you name it, it's in there. And it's something that I think, one, if you know a knitter or a crocheter, it's, you know, it's a great Christmas present.
Absolutely. You know what? It does look and feel amazing.
It's like, it's a weighty one, isn't it?
It is,
there's a lot of information in there. You can, for a complete beginner that's never knit before, I'm hoping this book would be able to teach you how to knit. And I just, but the fact that there's just like a lot of colour and a lot of like different and interesting things that have just basically my brain's splattered onto pages. So
I think it's really, really healthy that you find something outside of diving that you're able to pour so much into.
I'm happy
because some people go absolutely mad. I think
I know that's really hard for an athlete to like go from, like, because there's not very many careers that you have to like retire like by 30. So you always have to have something to come next. So
would that have worried you knowing that?
Yeah, if I didn't have things set up, it would be a worry because you don't, you know, you want to be able to go into something quite seamlessly. And like, I've been very fortunate to find knitting and be able to have opportunities in TV space and things like that. But yeah, it can be quite a daunting thing.
It's probably weird to think about, but say it hadn't worked out and you put all the training in and you never made it.
Yeah.
What sort of thing do you think you might have then gone into?
When I was growing up, like before like there were other opportunities around, I always wanted to be a pilot. So I don't know if I would have been a pilot.
You've probably been quite good at it.
I don't know.
I think you'd like probably be good precise at whatever you put your mind to, if it was something like that.
I feel like I'm quite a precise person, maybe. I think that's...
You don't say.
Well, you know, everything has to be quite precise. But, you know, I never really considered myself to be that much of a creative person either. Like, I enjoy creative things, but with diving, I never allowed myself to kind of step outside the box and think in a different way. Yeah. And it was only in the last couple of years since discovering knitting that it allowed me to think of my training as well in a more creative way and not kind of just do things by the book all the time.
Yeah, so it makes a lot of sense. So if there was someone listening who maybe they're a young person and they're an athlete, maybe not necessarily a diver, and you had to give them a piece of advice from you having gone through it, what would you tell them?
Pay attention to details, but also perspective is the biggest key to everything, because when you are in the moment, when you're in a diving competition or whatever you're doing, you think that it's the biggest moment of your whole life and you think that everybody's going to judge you based on that. And just always remember that you are more than your performance. So to always have that perspective of like always remembering what really matters most. And at the end of the day, as an athlete, you're not saving lives. Just have to always remember that you're doing it because you enjoy it.
I love it. It's good advice. Yeah, I'm going to get the book. I'm going to get tucked into bed and I'm going to sit and
knit,
just going to have fun.
Heaven.
It's amazing. Well, listen, Tom, thank you. But we are going to try one last thing before we finish up. One last little mind experiment.
Okay.
If you're up for it.
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Well, we've been talking a lot about knitting, a lot about diving. I want to take you on like a little visualization journey.
Okay.
Just to see if it works, right? Yeah. Try and relax during this a little bit as well, because I want you to feel like this. I don't want you to stress out. I'm going to try and pick up on what you're thinking and doing here. And if you're too tense, it'll mess me up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Fine. We don't want it to take like 3 hours. Okay. What I'm going to have you do is imagine in your head that you are about to go and dive, right?
Yes.
So you can like picture yourself in less clothing, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, strip off, get ready.
Mm-hmm.
You're there.
I'm there.
You're mentally
on poolside. I'm at the bottom of the steps.
That's good. You're at the bottom of the steps.
Yeah.
And in your head, I want you to travel the whole way up till you get to the board.
Yeah.
And take your time and tell me when you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you're there, you're going to dive, but you're going to do a very specific dive.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me which just yet. Are you at the board?
I'm on the edge.
You're on the edge of the board?
Am I meant to be on the edge yet?
You wherever you are is perfect.
Yeah, I'm on the edge.
That was fast.
Yeah.
How long would it actually take you usually to get?
Not that long, because I usually run up the stairs in training.
Have you ever slipped?
Oh, yeah. I've shredded my shins.
Yourself doing that?
I've shredded my shins so many times running up steps.
You'd have to be careful. If you just slipped and fell, they could wreck you.
Yeah. And some of the pools are like ladders as well. They're not even stairs.
Oh, that's got to be brutal.
Yeah. It's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. Because you're putting me off.
Sorry.
Diving.
Yeah. Yeah, injured a lot as well. But yeah.
I'm going to do knitting instead. Seems yeah, more low
much
effort.
Much safer.
Yeah, much safer. Mm. Cozier. Mm. Okay. You're at the edge of the board.
I'm on the edge of the board.
What I want you to do, and I'll take a second here, is I want you to visualize in your head jumping.
Yeah.
And you're going to perform a very particular dive of your choice in your head.
Yeah.
But I want you to really imagine you're doing it. If you have to close your eyes, you can. Really imagine doing it, doing all the twists and turns and whatever you happen to be doing. And then you're going to land in the water perfectly. You can execute it perfectly.
Great, I'm in the water.
You're in the water.
It's 1.5
seconds. So sorry, you're
seconds,
wet, so. You hit that 1.5. Yeah, it's pretty quick.
It's like pretty quick, yeah.
1.5 seconds, is that the average? That's sort of how
yeah,
long it takes?
Yeah, about the average, yeah.
That's so fast.
Yeah.
I want you to go up and do it again, just okay. One last time.
Yeah. I'm walking up the stairs, going up like this. It's the end.
Do you usually sing when you do the dive?
Sometimes when I'm visualizing. Like, yeah.
You've done it.
Just done another one.
Did you do the same dive twice?
Yes.
You did. The exact same move. Yeah. Okay, I'm curious now as to whether it was a random dive or whether you give it a specific name, or that's what I'm curious about. Was it just like...
Can I say what the dive was, but can I answer that question?
Yeah, you can answer the question.
It was a specific dive.
Specific dive.
A dive that I do.
There's a dive you actually do and you can do.
Yeah.
Is there any dive you can't do? One that...
Yeah, there's lots of dives I can't do.
Really?
Yeah, because there's lots of people that do, like, specifically train certain directions and do certain positions. And yeah, there's some dives that I'm too tall to do.
Ah.
So there's, yeah.
But this is one you can
this
do.
This is one that I can do.
And you
do
have done.
And have done.
Recently?
Well, in my last competition.
Oh, that gives me lots of clues.
So that narrows it down
to
six.
I got to do my research. Yeah. Okay. I'm just curious, right? From the second you walked in here and you met me, you didn't think that I was in any way pushing you to do anything in particular?
No.
Not the way I spoke to you when you walked in or during the podcast or anything like that?
No.
That felt like a free choice
as
to which dive you chose?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to just find you something. Do you remember whenever you came in, like right away, I went and I recorded the intro for the show, disappeared for a couple of seconds. It's not picking up my face, my iPhone. I'm going to go into my voice memos. I recorded this. Our listeners will already have heard this at the start of the show, just for giggles. It's 30 seconds long and you can see the timestamp we did do it before we started recording. I'm going to let you hear that in a second, right? What was the specific name, if there is a specific name, or describe the dive that you actually did?
So there's two names for it. I called it a gainer 3.5 tuck, which is also a reverse 3.5 tuck.
Gainer 3.5 tuck.
Yes. Okay, but it also means a reverse 3.5 tuck.
So reverse would count too, but you...
Reverse would
but
count
you,
too.
But which one did you choose to think?
Gainer. I wrote down gainer.
You wrote down gainer, not reverse.
I wrote down gainer 3.5 tuck.
Interesting. Okay, I'll let you hit play on that voice recording and hopefully it plays out loud.
I'm Joel M, and on this week's episode, I'm joined by Olympic gold medalist Tom Daly. Tom is a diver, and I've thought about nothing all week than one particular dive. That dive being the Gainer 3.5 Tuck, a dive that Tom has done multiple times across his career. I've been watching Tom over the last couple of weeks to get to know him a little bit, and this is the one I want him to think of. So, I'm going to try and influence him to tell me about this particular dive at the end of the podcast. Let's see if I can pull it off. For now, guard your minds and welcome to Influenced.
What on earth?
There we go.
How? I even chose gainer because that's not even like a word that is like even used in British diving. That's like American diving terms.
So
like slang.
What's going to really frustrate you is when you get a chance to listen to this, you will find out basically how that was done. Listen, for now, Tom, we're going to wrap up, but I want you just one more time to... Let's plug. This book looks absolutely beautiful. I'm absolutely going to grab a copy and I'm going to try and learn how to do it. I'll send you pictures to prove to you that I've been practicing.
Yay.
I think I'll be quite good at it with the whole sort of, nimble.
Your dexterity and your like hand-eye coordination will be perfect for
it. So I'm going
to
try that.
Often the hardest thing is to learn how to hold the needles, but...
I can use chopsticks.
You can use chopsticks.
Yes.
You can use, like, if you've got chopsticks at home, you could probably use it. But yeah, there's loads of things in there. And the nice thing is that, well, this comes out on the 27th of October,
then
beginning of November, you could also be able to get the kits that match the book to be able to use with all the yarn and the needles and stuff.
Oh, fantastic.
As well. So, yeah.
Great Christmas present for anyone listening as well. Get your orders in.
It is.
And listen, Tom, thank you so much for coming on the show. Please do pick up the book, Tom Dilly Made with Love. And is there anything else you want to talk about, plug?
No, I'm freaked out right now. I'm not, yeah. I'm actually quite a bit freaked out.
So I sometimes forget. It's so normal to me now at this point. I need to give people breathing room.
Yeah, that is. It's just, I really don't understand. I thought I was being really, and I nearly chose something else, but I didn't. And the fact that I didn't was like,
you wish you had. You wish you had messed me up.
I
and
wish
ruined,
I did. Yeah.
Ruins my podcast.
Yeah, I do. I wish I'd made you get it wrong and I won.
Next time, Tom. Thank you so much for coming on Influence. And to my listeners, guard your thoughts because you never know who might be listening. Here's what's coming up on next week's episode.
I was running next to it and then there was a guy sitting on a bench and he had his bike parked next to him. I thought, the train started to accelerate and I thought, I'm just going to do it. And I said, excuse me, please, can I borrow your bike? And he went, No.
No. Not a chance.
Please, I'm trying to chase the train. You can take my house keys.
Oh, wow.
And then he kind of looked and he's like, where are you going? Just up there, I'm just chasing it. And he said, don't go far. And I gave him the keys, took his bike, and then blasted after this
train. You come back and he's gone with your house keys.
If you want another podcast to listen to, why not try out a compelling new audio drama from Crowd Stories called Eliza? Eliza's a robot, but her story is very human. She exists in a world of dominance, manipulation, and love, all set in a future that's far too close for comfort. It's fiction, or is it? Just search for Eliza. And remember, be careful of your thoughts, because you never know who might be listening.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.